I'm Peter, recovered alcoholic. I had some neat questions during the break come up, explaining the third column in step four. And another gentleman had a great question. Going through the work, when does the spiritual experience happen? When am I going to get mine, you know? And what I shared with him was, let's not be attached to when, just knowing it will. Different times for different people. Because then our big book is a complete lie. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, spiritual transformation as a result of these steps. Thank you. It's a promise. So it'll happen different times for different people. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. When God shows up, God shows up. And then when that moment happens, that words really can't adequately describe, but the words will point to that which is truth anyway. You'll look back and say, in reflection, saying, my God, that's been happening to me for a while. My whole life is different. I'm not even thinking about drinking. My personal relationships have improved. I haven't stolen money. I'm showing up to work on time. I'm tended towards the ones I love. I'm sponsoring people. I'm experiencing this abundance of God in gratitude and perhaps even weeping right now and the tears of joy. But I look back and the last 3 months, 6 months, a year has been incredible, indescribably wonderful. So we'll get it. The third column in our fourth step, where it talks about pride, personal relationships, self-esteem, security, ambition, pocketbook, sex relations, all areas that we take a look at with self. And our book says we considered it carefully. Considering it carefully, we can see where fear is attached in all of those areas, which becomes really a precursor for our fear inventory. We get to pull fear right out of our third column. Pride, what does that mean? How I think others value me. What I think you think of me. How I open up that is, no one should see me this way. No one should know this about me. You know, get a divorce, fix my pride. No one should know I got divorced. No one should see me going through a divorce. No one should see me depressed over a divorce. How I think others value me. Because my thinking with that is, if I'm thinking you judging me, you thinking less of me, that means you don't like me. If you don't like me, you're not going to hang around with me. If you don't hang around with me, I won't have any friends. I'll be alone. I'll be abandoned. Oh my God, I'm going to die. Person relationships, how I think this relationship should look. We should get along. We should be friendly. We should walk shoulder to shoulder. We ought to be on the same page, right? And you're not doing that, so I'm incredibly angry with you. Great expectation. Right? Treat people like God and God like people. Right? My self-esteem, how I value me, how I see or feel about myself. Now, my sponsor showed me this one. I would always write my self-esteem. I'm lower than a curb. I'm an awful person. I deserve all these bad things. He says, that's not why you're resentful. It's from this way over the top self-esteem. I'm a spiritual person. I'm a caring person. I'm a loving person. I'm tender with all who come into my life. If I'm that way, then how could you, damn it, treat me any less than that? It's kind of another way of saying, don't you know who I am? I'm this great guy, and you offended me. How could you do that? It's really your fault, not mine. Right? We get to see that. My sex relations, not only sex, but my ideas about men and women, the roles we play. Real men do this, women do that. And it wasn't until I wrote down a thorough inventory that I got to see the judgments I put on old belief systems with women and men. I had a great assignment given to me once. My idea of a real man. And I got to see it play out in inventory. Real men are tough. Real men are rich. Real men have possessions. Real men always work. Real men are fearless. John Wayne, all the time. You ever watch a John Wayne movie? He cracks about one guy per minute. I mean, it's unbelievable. I love him. Walks in, hits you. You know, next scene, hits you. Real man, John Wayne. Right? Well, what about the man who is meek, who can't fight? That make him less than a man? What about the man who cries? You know, real men don't cry. What about the man who's emotional? Less than a man. What about the man who just doesn't have money? Less than a man. What about the man who can't get work, who can't find work? He less than a man? Hmm? Got to see these things in my third column. Real men do this. And I got to see my belief systems about women. Women do this. Women are supposed to do that. Women are supposed to behave that way. Women are supposed to do this. My Lord. Completely distorted. I got to see that. And the first time through inventory, I just got to take a look at my sexual behavior. You know, when it was all really about me. Control and power. Security, my emotional security. What I need to be okay. I need this from you to be okay. I need that to be okay. I need her to say I love me all the time to be okay. I love watching some folks. The girlfriend tells him in one day 52 times, I love you more than anything in the world, right? That's on Monday. Tuesday comes into me and the relationship's over. It's over. What happened? She only told me I love you 12 times today, you know. I need this from you to be okay. And we get to see how our sense of self is wrapped up in who I be, is wrapped up in what you think of me. That's bondage. If you don't like me, I'm ruined. There is no me. Great, great example. They always heard about in Alcoholics Anonymous. You walk into a room, there's 10 people there. 9 say, hey, Pat, you look great. One guy says, hey, Pat, what happened? You don't look so good today. Guess who Pat's going home with? That one opinion, right? I'd walk into a room, they say, Pete, love that jacket. Looks really good on you. Love it. Where'd you buy it? I'm feeling really good. Joe comes over and says, jacket doesn't fit you. Guess who I'm going home with? I got to get a new jacket. Get rid of it. I listen to the one person because my dependence, my survival is on your opinion of me. In fact, I don't even need you to prove me. I need you to worship me. That's bondage. What I need to be okay. You'll see it in relationships all the time. All the time. Especially relationships that are untreated, two untreated people. See it all the time. It's not love, it becomes obsessions, trying to have a relationship. My ambition, what I want, my goal, what I want. How's that hurt, interfered, or threatened? You know, if I have a fight with my boss, my job security is hurt, interfered, or threatened. My ambition to go to work, to have a career at this place, my ambition to have a relationship with this guy has been hurt, interfered, or threatened. In fact, I don't even want to go to work tomorrow. Who wants to work for him anyway? Then he gives you a promotion. I work for the greatest guy in the world, you know. It's all about perceptions. You ever do this? You go to a meeting and you sit down and they say, tonight's speaker is Pete. And you go, oh, no, not Pete. God, I can't stand this guy. He's going to talk about the big book. Hey, Joe, is there another meeting we can go to? I hate this guy, right? And about 2 minutes into the talk, I say, you know, I want to thank Joe so much for helping my recovery. Suddenly Joe goes, hey, this is a great meeting and I love Pete. I'm glad we came tonight, right? Perceptions, right? Pocketbook is money. Money. How's that hurt, interfered, or threatened? You know, if I'm writing about my boss, my money's threatened. You know, look back over my life. How was my pocketbook affected? And I write that out. You know, very simple stuff. They get to see how I'm playing God in column 3. In every area of my life, I demand, need, want, gotta have, so I feel okay. And my dependence is really, truly upon external conditions and people. Now, back in How It Works, it said no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. And I'm looking at my third column, and it's about human power and things to relieve me of my condition, to make me feel good. Remember I said about going out there to fill that hole in the soul, to fill that void? Well, here it is. I need all this from out there to feel good. And I get to see how it's never going to happen because of my distorted perceptions of everything about life. Then I go over to the fourth column. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? We do a fear inventory. List the fear. Why do I have the fear? Fear of dying. Why do I have this fear? One of my teachers had me write out all my fears. Fear of dying, fear of no money, fear of health, fear of heights. You know, had all these fears. You know, silly fears, obvious fears, right? Fear of being alone, fear of not being in a relationship. He says, now write the opposite of every fear. Fear of no money, fear of having money. Let me think, well, yeah, that means everyone's going to want it. Comes responsibility. You know. Fear of no relationship, fear of being in a relationship. That means I have a commitment to someone. I'm responsible and accountable to someone. I don't want that either. And we got to see in a lot of areas where it was really just about my untreated condition and my perceptions of everything. No matter what I had, I was still not right. No matter what you gave me, I was still fear. Fear is the evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Evil and corroding thread. One thread through this jacket, the whole jacket disintegrates. One thread through our life of fear, the whole life disintegrates because it's manifested in thought, word, and deed, coming from a place of fear. Some of us go in when we're fearful and wall up. No one's getting in. Some of us strike out when we're in fear, and I'm going to get you before you get me. Thought, word, and deed, fear, the evil and corroding thread. We'll see every area of our life is affected by fear. Fear has free room and board in this wonderful thing called the thinking mind that we actually worship from time to time. My mind said it must be true. Let's go. My mind said, I'm in fear right now, so I guess I'm in fear. My mind said, let's pick up a double jack. Okay, great. Let's get drunk. It's good thinking. Yeah. We become worshipers of our mind. This great problem-making machine. Where fear has free room and board. It sits right next to the ego. You know. Sex inventory. Make a list of the relationships I've had. One of the things I've done many times is little brief story about why I got involved in this relationship. What were the main points in this relationship? How did it end? You know, and then I go to the questions in our big book. You know. Where was I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? See, very often I would write down in the sex inventory, who did I hurt? Her. Well, that's obvious. And then I got to see, well, I didn't only hurt her. I hurt maybe her parents, maybe some of her friends. If she had children, perhaps her children, maybe my parents, maybe my family, over this one relationship because of my selfish and inconsiderate habits. Look outside the relationship, and we see how one untreated person affects many. Right? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should have I done instead? Not could, but should. We list all these things. One sentence it takes to do this. We're not looking for some long story. I'm really taking my inventory. No matter what she did, no matter what she said, no matter what they did, no matter what they said, it's my inventory. It's the only way we're going to get free. Rubber hits the road. Uncover, discover, and discard. And truly, if I've had a real experience with step one, this is a cakewalk. No matter how much I'm getting disturbed, it beats drinking. It beats being in the throes of addiction. We list some principles and off we go. One of the things in sex inventory, we create this prayer, the sex goal and ideal. It usually looks like the opposite of where I harmed others. You know, how I would like to see my future sex life, a sane and sound ideal. Pretty much, in a nutshell, carrying a vision of God's will into that activity too. We go sit with someone in step five and pass this on. One of the biggest warnings in the Big Book come on page 72, where it says, if we skip this vital step, step five, we may not overcome drinking. My book just warned me, don't do step five. There's a good possibility we're getting drunk again. See, we can do a searching, fearless, and moral inventory and then tuck it away in a drawer and never discuss it with anyone. But it's insufficient, incomplete. Part of the house cleaning process is step five. And it's really step five is an extension of step four. If inventory is done and tucked away and no step five, the fourth step's incomplete. It becomes completed in sharing with another person who happens to be on this path, who's objectionable and understands what we're doing and why we have to do it. Make sense? On page 75, it says, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, step four, and are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why they have to do it. The sponsors know. I read this to them. It says he or she should realize we're engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored with our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Draw a little line right there on your page. That's the first half of the story here in step five, first half of the fifth step. Up until that point, it's about bringing us to go share. Everything that follows is the effects produced by step five. 6, 7, 8, 9, the fifth step promises. They may materialize for some of us as soon as we're done with step five. We may get them in 6, 7, 8, 9, but they will happen. Now, each time I go sit, and I've gotten into sitting with more than one person, hearing my fifth step, someone then my sponsor, right? More people know about me or on this path, the freer I've gotten more of a feeling of freedom with that. More people who know about me on this path, who hear this inventory, the freer I get. And each time I go through it, and I've done it many times, I get a little squirrely still. A little uneasy. Oh my God, how am I going to do this? You know, I tell them everything like a new person. But God gives me enough to go sit down and share everything, and they always look a little bit bored about halfway through. You know? How many more pages you got there, you know? My first sponsor, I showed up to him with 5 spiral notebooks. He told me he was meditating. I think he was sleeping. But each time, every one of these people have heard it, they've shared their own experiences. They've given me insight. Yeah, this happened to me, and is it, you know, this is how I worked through it. Is it possible it's really this and not that? You know, gave me direction, shared their own experiences. And I get through it. Now, when I hear a fifth step, there's a few things I do. First, I know the person coming to my house to share their fourth step with me is a little uneasy, a little uncomfortable about it, right? I haven't met anyone come to my house and say, I can't wait to give you my fourth step. They're always real kind of quiet, you know, close to the ground, walking in a door. Right? I know that. And I greet them and give them the same love and compassion that was given to me each and every time I share with someone, with no judgments. And my preparation for that is I go into sacred silence and I ask God, make me an instrument. Allow me to carry the vision of your will into this activity right now. I know why this person is here. I know the importance of this. And they'll get to my house and we'll do some reading. We'll make prayer together. We'll get still and then off we go. And they start reading to me. And what I do is I keep a notepad and a pen next to me, because while they're reading to me, I'm going to listen to what they're saying. I'm going to listen to what they're not saying. I'm going to watch their body language, too, when they're talking. Usually when it gets down to sex inventory, people are giving you like, you know, sex inventory, I did this. They don't want to look at the page. They're all wrapped up in a ball. They're still full of shame, a lot of guilt. I can see that. I can see when they're talking about resentment with someone, how their body posture suddenly gets really aggressive. This one, they're serious with them. They're really angry with this person. I look for that. What I do with a notepad and pen is I take notes. A lot of things keep showing up. Different people, same thing over and over and over again. So when we get to page 20, I can say, hey, Joe, remember you talked about this back on the first resentment? You see how it's been showing up? Is it possible? Consideration. Is it possible? Consideration. Is it possible? Consideration. I have it all in front of me. And I start to see these same defects showing up over and over and over again. And not only helps me hear them better, but it helps them for defects of character in 6 and 7. Because they get that list to go home and sit with in that hour just for some consideration. Now, my time in a fifth step, I'm not one of these marathoners. I go max 4 hours. If we're not done, we need to make another appointment. My job is to be of maximum service to you. And if I'm just listening with a dead ear, I'm not of service to you. And I start to wear out around 3 hours. And I'll hang in there for 4 hours. If you're not done, we'll visit again. You know. And we'll do the whole process. We'll finish it. I had a gentleman come to my house. I would love to share this story. We get these guys that come to our house. You know, they're just still full of self. And the ego really hasn't been broken yet. And this gentleman, we'll call him Joe, comes to my house. And we're sitting down. And he's reading me his fourth step. And inventory after inventory after inventory. Ego's all over. And he's giving me, yeah, but let me explain. You know that? You know, resentment, you know, them, they did this to me. Let me explain really what happened. I let them know on the front end, I'm going to stop you during inventory when you're reading to me. I'm going to ask you some questions. If I don't stop you, then just read exactly what's on paper. I don't need you editing. We don't need ego coming into this. Read exactly what you put on paper. That's what God gave you. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear drama. If I ask, you answer. Other than that, your job is to read today. You know, alcoholics, we love drama, right? You got any drama? I'm looking for drama. Let's invent drama. Let's make up drama. But I need drama. You know? So we eliminate that. Well, this guy comes to my house and he's yeah-butting all over the place. And we had to take a break. I was running low on energy. And going to the bathroom, cold water on my face. And I'm like just sweating bullets. What am I going to do with this guy? God, what do I do? I have no clue, but he's killing me. I'm here in a fifth step sponsor. I think I need a drink. So I make prayer and get on my knees. God, just please tell me what to do with this guy. I don't know what to do. I go back into the dining room. I sit down at the table. I still don't know what I'm going to do with this guy. And out of my mouth comes, Joe, all I want you to do is read your fourth column to me. I haven't done this since. Never did it before. Couldn't even believe those words came out. But it was, Joe, just read your fourth column to me. Nothing else. Can't do that. What do you mean? He was just, you know, I just read your fourth column to me. And I saw what God gave me and why. So with some reluctance, he began to read selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, turn the page. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, turn the page over and over and over. And then something happened that I could try to explain, but it's going to be inadequate. This guy at my dining room table split right down the middle. His ego split right in half. Something came over this guy. It's like when Bill talks about Ebby, the boy was on fire, something to that effect. This guy just lit up in front of me. I remember getting like goosebumps on my arm. So, oh my God, I don't know what this is, but this is incredible. He got it. And it was by hearing his part over and over. And what we did was we crushed his ego. We didn't just get the ego to dissolve. We crushed it. It couldn't breathe. It died right in front of me. And suddenly emerged this person that was there all along, like we are. But we just have to get the stuff out of the way, get removed. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. God gave me some words to kill this guy's ego on the spot. This guy, I used to tease him because he was always looking for loopholes in any part of the book. Find a loophole, find a loophole. This guy goes through 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, into 10, 11, and 12, and he would go to meetings. Every meeting he walked to with a big book under his arm. Any meeting, big book under his arm, passionate about giving it away, looking to sponsor people. I sat in a meeting, go down to this Monday night meeting a handful of years ago in Staten Island, New York, and he had the meeting. And I knew he was on fire, and I sat there and I listened to this guy give a talk. I was blown away by what was coming out of him. You know, I remember just saying, thank you, God. Another one. Another one's going to go do your work. It happened by hearing this fifth step. The power that goes on. The power of God. The power we get right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I shared last night at a meeting, and I've shared this many times, that the greatest spiritual teachers God has put in my path have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've sought out many. And we go through our entire life, what's written on paper, and we share with someone else. Some of us can share with just one person, just the sponsor. That's okay to do. Some of us may want to share with personal persons, plural, more than one person. That's what I've been on a path with lately, and it works for me. I experience more freedom with that. It also opens up the door to me sharing my daily inventory more than just one person. In fact, I have, for the last few years, a couple of immediately folks. Step 10 says we discuss with someone immediately about a resentment. We have an immediately crew. I have three guys. A guy I sponsor has three guys. Another guy I sponsor, he has his three guys. It goes like this. Joe, how you doing? Listen, I have an immediately. Do you have time? Immediately is the buzzword. Yeah, go. Resentment, her. She did this. Can't get past it. Tried praying. I'm stuck with this. They'll hear it. They know it's an immediately. It's not like, hey, what's going on? How are you going to a meeting? That's a social call. This is an immediately. And they only call on those immediately's. A new guy I'm working with calls me up and did this text thing. I hate text messages. How much more anonymous do you want to get? Now you can't even call me. Well, I can't see you, but you can call me and we can talk. Now you can even text me, you know. Anyway, and then you got to see me trying to text back. Can't even hit the button the right way. And I just call people back, like, what do you want? You know? So this guy texts me a message, please call me urgent. So I have some accountability response. I sponsor this guy. I call him up. I'm wondering if it's urgent. Why is he texting me? It took a long time to text. I call him up, and he's talking to me about drama, about a girl. She don't love me anymore. And I said to him, we'll call him Joe. Joe, are you about to drink? Are you thinking about drinking? No, not at all. Is anyone you know close to you thinking about drinking? No, not at all. Anyone need to go to the hospital right now? No. Do you need to go to the hospital? No. So this is not call you urgent. This is to dump on me. Have a nice day. Click. He called me back. You know what he called me back with? I have some inventory to read to you. I said, now I'll listen. He was angry with this woman because she didn't want to be in this relationship with him, and he loaned her money and all this other jazz, and he was just upset about that. And bless him, he's a great guy too, super guy. But I'm not going to listen to drama. I'm not going to do it. You know why? I let your illness breathe, and it's not going to breathe in a phone call with me. I'm sorry. My sponsor used to give guys 2 minutes. You got 2 minutes, go. Right. Okay. A few of you like me till just about now, I know that. Ask Chris, I'm very compassionate. I hope. I will not entertain drama, I won't do it. You know, we have a tendency to say, My sponsor brought this to my attention because I did it. Are you married? It's a yes or no answer. Are you married? Yes, I am. Are you married? No, right? Simple question requires a simple answer. But when I ask an alcoholic that, are you married? Well, let me... You know. Right? Right. So you know what I'm talking about. My sponsor called me up one time and he asked me a simple question. We'll call him Joe. He says, have you seen Joe lately? Well, I gave him my review of the group Joe belonged to. I gave him a review of Joe's friends. And then I gave him a review about Joe before I answered if I saw Joe lately. And he said, Pete, all I wanted to know if you've seen Joe. That was it. You hear what you just did? And we're just great at that. That's why when someone calls me up, if it's a social call, that's different. Hey, you want to go to a ball game and, you know, just want to see how you were doing. But if you're calling me up for drama and I sponsor you, you know better. I'm not going to endorse your illness. You know better when you signed up for me to sponsor you. Now, after you give me some inventory, or you can call me up and be really upset, but you have inventory in front of you, I will listen to you till tomorrow morning because I know you're sincere about this phone call. You really want to get well. Your willingness is manifested in your actions, and your actions tell me you want to get well because you're showing up with inventory. You're looking to get past this. You're not just looking for someone to dump on and then have a nice day. Trust me, when you're at this on the firing line and you're sponsoring lots of people, you can't let people dump on you. You endorse their illness. You hurt them. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in a simple way we've just outlined. As a sponsor, that's a huge responsibility. And I get to do that. I'm going to help you recover, and it's not going by entertaining your illness on his phone or when we go for coffee or when you come to my house for step work. Go talk to your therapist about that. And again, I will listen when it needs to be listened to. I had a gentleman show up to my house. Another example of this. I had this guy write out answer some first step considerations. I just write it out. Page or two, max. Comes to my house, has a briefcase. I was already concerned. Okay? Got a new guy coming to my house with a briefcase. I'm concerned. Most guys come to my house who are new with the clothes on their back, right? Comes to my house with a briefcase, opens up this attaché case. Like, attaché case? What are you doing here? I mean, you know. So he opens a book. God's my witness, 100 pages, handwritten first step considerations. It started from the day he was basically born. One of the questions were, just write out briefly your unmanageability and consequences of your drinking. That was one of the questions. He had about 30 pages just for that. I says, I'll call him Joe. I says, Joe, do me a favor. Go to the last page. Let me hear what's on the last page. In one paragraph, he had the whole assignment done. The rest, the other 99 and a half pages, was drama. What service am I giving him if I listen to 99 prior pages before I got to what I needed to help him with? Right? That guy hasn't called me since. Because I told him just that. That was the last I seen of him. We get done with this and we move into step 6 and 7. And a couple of things on step 6 and 7. Before we get there, our big book asks us some questions. Bottom of page 75... middle of page 75, when we get done with the fifth step, we have some fifth step promises. It says, once in having taken this step, step 5, withholding nothing, we are delighted. Promise. We can look the world in the eye. Promise. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Another promise. Our fears fall from us. Promise. I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. Another promise. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now I begin to have a spiritual experience. Although it may be the infancy of the spiritual experience, it's happening. The gentleman in the, wherever he is who asked me about that, when is this spiritual experience out? Here's what they're telling us. We begin to have this spiritual experience. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. That contradicts the contemporary a belief system, which is it's normal to think about a drink because you're an alcoholic. You're always going to think about a drink because you're an alcoholic. My book says it's going to begin to disappear. Not present anymore. Not thinking about it. We will often feel that we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Those promises may happen for us right after 5, 6, and 7, 8, and 9. I start to experience this one night up at a meeting when I was just did my 7-step prayer. Something, boom, just happened. I was kind of like electrified. I knew it. Something was different. I couldn't explain it. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It tells us to go home. And we retire. When we get home, we get quiet for an hour after the 5th step. And it gives us some things to do. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. That's a prayer. Thank you, God, for allowing me to finish this 5th step. Was one of the prayers. Thank you, God, for the courage, strength, and direction to go to my sponsor's house and share every intimate detail of my life with him. We take this book down from the shelf and we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps. We ask if we have omitted anything. For we're building an archway to which we're going to walk through free at last. This archway God's creating for us, we're going to go through this archway. There's a squeezing that goes on when we go through the archway. We're going to go through. We're going to get free at last when we get to the other side. Many things we thought were getting us free, our book says finally free, at last. We're still in step 5, by the way. The power that we're going to get. It says, is our work solid so far? Are the stones in the archway properly in place? Have I skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Have I tried to make mortar without sand? Another way of saying this, our book is asking us, have I tried to sneak anything through the archway? Am I really clear on all of the work I've done? I did some work, and what I came up with is another way it says, when it says we consider that we looked at the first 5 proposals. Right? Am I clear on all of those proposals? And I give this to men I sponsor with. Step 1, do I believe I'm powerless over alcohol? My life's unmanageable. Do I believe I have no power, choice, or control before the first drink in my mind and the body after I drink? Do I believe I cannot manage my own life? Do I believe my mind will take me back to a drink? Do I believe that my body's quite as abnormal as my mind and my body will experience the phenomenon of craving if I pick up a drink? Just done my 5th step. Am I still convinced of this stuff? Do I believe I will experience a strange mental blank spot without a spiritual experience? Am I still clear on that? I look at step 2. Am I still willing to accept spiritual help? And if not, no, I will experience the bitter end. Am I still willing to have God restore me to sanity? Is everything going through God or is it going through me? Am I turning my will and life over to care of me or God? Do I believe God can and will relieve my alcoholism? Am I willing to believe in, or I do now still believe in, a power greater than myself? Step 3 considerations. Am I still convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? Finish my 5th step. Am I still convinced of that? Am I willing to quit playing God in every area of my life? And am I clear in turning my will and life over to care of God as I currently understanding my life is no longer any of my business? Am I still clear with that in step 5? And lastly, in step 4, have I tried to sneak anything through the archway? Lied. God won't find out. I answer these questions. Page 76 says, answer these questions to my own satisfaction. not the sponsors anymore. My book has given me a tip-off. I've had a shift in consciousness. I can answer these questions honestly. To my own satisfaction, have I been thorough? Yes. Move on to 6 and 7. An assignment I give some folks is this. They make a list of defects of character that were revealed to them in 5, and then write down the opposite of every defect of character. And I offer this stuff to God. He's going to do what he wants anyway. Father, this is what revealed to me. I've been dishonest. Thank you for honesty. I've been hateful. Thank you for love. I've been intolerant. Thank you for tolerance. Get it? And then I'm going to affirm that willingness with the 7-step prayer. And then God's going to mold me the way he needs. I just show up to the altar as a humble student and offer this stuff to God. This is what was revealed to me. I'm willing to cut every one of these defects of character loose, every one of them. All my dishonesty, all my vengefulness, all my spitefulness, all my jealousy, all my self-seeking, all of it. And I thank you for this. Now, here's the thing about 6 and 7. It becomes, as one of my teachers showed me, a first step for life. Because when all is said and done, we're left with these defects of character that are going to kill us. And if they don't go, we'll go back to a drink. We'll go back to an untreated life. We'll go back to a drink. 6 and 7 becomes a first step for life. It actually takes us back home to pure in spirit again. It takes us home, 6 and 7, to the way we were put here, free from defect. Many times in meetings, at step 6 and 7 meetings, you'll hear people say, well, I will never be perfect. I'm human. I'll always have defects of character. Perhaps. Sure, I'll go along with that. But to make a bold statement as, I will always be imperfect, we will always be imperfect, we will always have defects of character, that's narrow-minded when it comes to the power of God. Because here's the consideration. If God, your God, was loving and all-powerful, as you say he, it, or she is, and he came down, walked into this meeting today, and tapped one of us on the head, and say, from here on out, you will be perfect without defect. Is that possible? I have to, if my God is all love and all powerful, I have to say that's possible. I have to say that's possible. Because as soon as I say that's impossible, my God got really small, and I put him, it, or she in a box. And I'm using me now for God. I'm using me for my outlook upon life. I'm using me as God. I'm using my thinking mind to figure out God. And I can't figure out God. I can't understand God, but simply experience God. Right? So I said, yeah, that's possible. I was a fall-down drunk living in the back of an abandoned building on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, unemployable. Didn't shower or change my clothes for way too long. As long as I had a bottle of Mr. Boston Blackberry Brandy in me, I was good. And then that didn't work. And I needed more and more and more. And none of it worked. I was what looked like a bum on the Bowery. God got me sober, put me here today. All things are possible with God. If God wanted to walk in here and said, from here on out, Nicole, you will be without defective character. I have to say, yeah, that's very possible. I've seen lives get resurrected and reborn in 12 simple steps. Experientially, I can tell you what it's like living in the sunlight of the Spirit. It resembles nothing like me going into rehab number 7. All things are possible with God. I've been freed of that. So when my book talks to me about defects of character, I offer. And God will do with me as he wants. How many of these defects were fueled by fear? Almost all of them. Is not God more powerful than fear? Isn't fear just a manifestation of self? Isn't God greater than self, more powerful than self, more loving than self? Absolutely. So God's greater than my defect of character, yeah. So if I turn to him, he's going to mold me to go do his work, whatever I need. Pure in spirit again, awakened, pure consciousness. And I affirm this whole thing with a 7-step prayer. which has little to do with me, but a whole lot to do about being of service to you and God. Grant me strength to go out from here to do your bidding. 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Do you see the injustice to this book and to God when you go to an AA meeting and they tell us, put the plug in the jug? What about all of this? Right. Listen, we take a poll of, I don't know how many people in this room, about 100 or so. We're being taped. There's about 2,000 people here today. let's try. About 100 or so people here. How many of us truly shouldn't be sitting here today? Whether in treatment or visiting, but we are. Based on our track record, we're supposed to probably be out on a drunk, a run, in prison, or dead. But we have about 100 or so of us here today. Alive, upright, sober, with hope. And not using hope as an attachment where when it gets that way, I'll be okay. But just the light at the end of the tunnel isn't a train anymore headed for me. Which is just something. You get attached to hope, and when it gets better, you know, when it gets like that, I'll be okay. But with hope, the fire has been lit. That's a great thing. Based on our track record, this room should be empty. And that includes me in the picture. Great things happen with God. He can remove some defects of character. He can give me strength, courage, and direction to go out and repair the wreckage of my past. He can push me through the archway. He can get me into 10 and 11. He can get me to go work with others and stand here as I am today with dignity, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, pep rally, and Alcoholics Anonymous for God, and nothing less than that great fact. Let's get that real clear with every one of us. Let's go back to our home groups and shout from the rooftops about the power of God in Alcoholics Anonymous and our own experience with God. And who doesn't like it? Let's offer them friendship and fellowship. Amen. Let's not be warring theologians. Let's shout from the rooftops about the power of God in the sacred rooms called Alcoholics Anonymous. Fortunately, I get to visit a big family outing tomorrow. I've become an integral part of my family the past few years, and I love being around them. My dad and I, this guy called Dad, who I was just so fearful of, we have just this really neat relationship, same relationship with my brothers, and we're having this big party for one of my brothers tomorrow, and the whole, it's going to look like a reunion of the Sopranos tomorrow, by the way. The whole... Hey, how you doing? How you doing? So we're all going to be together tomorrow, which means I have to leave early. This is my last session, and my dear friend Chris is going to take us home, and he's going to give a talk tonight. And really stick around and hear Chris tonight, because it's really a treat. And I thank all of you for listening to me and giving me permission to speak. And to the group, Dustin, Adam, and New Beginnings, and all of you, thank you for listening. That's all I got. Peace.